राधा श्याम सुंदर की जय, श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय, श्री श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय, निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु एंड गौरांगा। ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरुः श्रीयुतपदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपादां सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च। नमो ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देश तारिणे। मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वंदे श्रीगुरुं दीनतारिणं। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। नमो महावदान्याय कृष्ण प्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्ण चैतन्य नामने गौरत्विषे नमः। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। So once again we are gathered here to hear Ram Katha. Yesterday we were discussing the way in which Valmiki Muni composed the Ramayana under the inspiration of Brahmaji and with the help of Narad Muni. And as we mentioned yesterday, for the next 2 or 3 days, we will try to discuss some themes or topics from the Valmiki Ramayana and related scriptures. Because it is not possible to cover the whole Valmiki Ramayana in just 3 or 4 days. Now, glorification of the Lord implies glorification of the devotees also. In fact, when the devotees are glorified, the Lord is automatically glorified. And glorification of the Lord must necessarily involve glorification of the devotee. The Lord and his devotee are never separated. They are always eternally together. And therefore they are glorified together. In fact, glorification of the devotee of the Lord is more pleasing to the Lord than glorification of the Lord directly. Of course, the devotees are more pleased when the Lord is glorified. This is the transcendental competition that takes place, with each wanting to glorify the other. So when we want to glorify Lord Ramachandra on the occasion of his upcoming appearance day, we can also glorify his great devotees and thus please Lord Ramachandra. The moment we mention Lord Ram and we talk about his devotee, who is the first name that comes to mind? See, in everybody's mouth the same word has come. Nobody thought of anything different. Everyone, just the first name that came to everyone's mind is Hanuman. When you think of a devotee of Lord Ram, automatically Hanuman springs to mind. Lord Ramachandra has unlimited devotees. Even in the spiritual world, the Lord has unlimited devotees, and even here in the material world. So today, we will glorify Hanumanji. Would you all like to hear about Hanuman? So Hanuman is immortal, just as Lord Ram is. Whenever there will be discussions on Sri Ramachandra, there will be discussions on Hanumanji. It's inevitable. Hanuman is one of the favorite personalities in the lives of devotees. And even in sampradayas like ours, where we focus essentially on the worship of Radha Krishna in the mood of Vrindavan, we do not give so much emphasis to the worship of the Lord in the bhava of Vaikuntha, where there is awe and reverence. The planet of Ayodhya is somewhat in between Vaikuntha and Goloka. And so the worship of Lord Ramachandra is also somewhat in between. There is certainly awe and reverence, but not as much as in Vaikuntha. And there is also some intimacy, a lot of sweetness, but that intimacy is not as much as exists between the devotees of the Lord in Vrindavan, in Goloka Vrindavan. But nevertheless, there is a special sweetness that is to be found even in the devotees of Lord Ram, especially the service of Hanuman. And therefore, even amongst the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and in our literature, we will often find references to Hanuman coming up in so many different places. Even in our most basic scripture, Hanuman finds mention. Where is he mentioned? Can anyone say? In the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he is referred to only by one word, which is Kapi. Kapi Dhvaja is the name of Arjuna. He on whose dhvaja or flag is the symbol of Kapi. Kapi means a monkey. Of course, as we will see, Hanuman is not to be considered an ordinary monkey, but nevertheless, because he belongs to that species from the worldly point of view, so he is addressed in the Bhagavad Gita as Kapi. So in the Bhagavad Gita it is described that Arjuna's chariot, which was being driven by Lord Krishna himself, had a flag. all the chariots had their own decorations and flags. And Arjuna's chariot had Hanuman's emblem on it. And therefore Arjuna, who is also known by many, many names, just like Krishna is in the Bhagavad Gita, is also called Kapidhvaja. And what role did Hanuman perform being situated there on the flag of Arjuna in the battlefield of Kurukshetra? Srila Prabhupada says in one purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam that victory for Arjuna was assured because Krishna was on his side, because Krishna was his charioteer. And with regard to Hanuman's emblem being on his flag, Srila Prabhupada mentions that by the grace of Lord Ramachandra, Hanuman, his great devotee, became so powerful that he could wreak havoc in the kingdom of Ravan. He entered into what was otherwise the impregnable city of Lanka, and he destroyed much of the city. He killed many of the fierce Rakshasa warriors, and he could, if he wanted to, easily kill Ravana and all the other Rakshasas there. So powerful was he, simply by the grace of Lord Ramachandra. Because wherever there is a devotee, there is a Lord. So the devotee will always emerge victorious. Similarly, Arjuna was there and Krishna was there, so Arjuna's victory was assured. And in order to reinforce the possibility, or the certainty rather, of Arjuna's victory, the significance of Hanuman on the flag is that the same Hanuman was here, and that same Lord Ramachandra in Treta Yuga had now appeared in Dwapar Yuga as Krishna. So here again, victory was assured for Arjuna. Of course, as we know, the pictures of the Lord, the deities of the Lord, are not different from the Lord himself. And similarly, even for the great eternal associates of the Lord, their deities or their pictures are also not different from them. So when Hanuman was present on the flag, we can understand that he was also present in all his power, in all his shakti there, to give blessings to Arjuna and the Pandavas to win this battle. And to just know a little bit of history about how Hanuman helped Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra, we need to look a little bit at the Mahabharata. This was when the Pandavas were in exile in the forest, and they had, while traveling to many, many wonderful places, reached Badrika Ashram, the very holy place high up in the Himalayas. One time when Draupadi Devi was sitting relaxing in one shaded area of the forest, and Bhima also happened to be close by, a beautiful, fragrant and colorful flower happened to come in wafting through the breeze. Draupadi Devi immediately took a liking and a fancy to that flower and indicated to Bhima that she would like to have that flower. Bhima had been feeling very sorry for Draupadi because she had had to undergo so many difficulties in the forest. And so he was very eager to somehow or other please her. So he immediately set out into the forest, up into the hills, from the direction, in the direction from which this flower had come. And he was full of strength and vigor. It is described that Bhima's strength was that of 10,000 elephants. And it is also appropriate that we are talking about Bhima because he shares something common with Hanuman that we will see as we go on. So Hanuman was roaring in the ecstasy of feeling his own strength and vigor. And he was roaring as he went along, knocking down the trees, and he went higher and higher into the forest, And as he went higher, the forest became more and more beautiful. And all the animals fled in fear because of the loud roaring and the strong motions of Bhima. And even big elephants came, and Bhima would just toss them out of the way so that they would not become a hindrance to his path. Many tigers would come to attack, and he would just slap them off as if he was slapping off a mosquito. And in this way, there was havoc inside that forest. And Bhima went up and up and up. Soon he noticed some aquatic birds somewhere above the treetops, and he surmised that if there are aquatic birds, then there must be water. And if there's water, then there may be some lotuses or some flowers there. Maybe the Saugandhika flower, which Draupadi saw, came from here. So he headed towards that direction. Suddenly, on the path, he saw a monkey lying there, who was blocking the road. And Bhima was in a hurry, so he roared from a distance, so that the monkey would get afraid and go out of the path. But the monkey did nothing of the sort. The monkey just lay there. And then, when Bhima came close by, and again loudly roared and asked the monkey to move, the monkey, in a very lazy fashion, just opened one eye or little bit, just half opened his eye, and said, "O valiant warrior, don't you see that I am sick and old? I am ill here. I do not have the energy to move. Why are you roaring at me like this to move? And by the way, it is not proper for you to create so much havoc in this serene forest. You have been causing so much destruction. You have been disturbing all the animals and have been even killing them, or not kill, but harming them so much. Actually, all cultured beings should never harm any living entity. And furthermore, please know that beyond this path where I am lying now is a realm where only the residents of the higher planets can move. It is only the higher evolved beings can go there, not human beings who live on earth. So please stop here." Bhima was very astonished to see this monkey speaking like this in perfect language. So he suddenly became a little humble and respectful. And he said, "My dear sir, you do not look like an ordinary monkey. So please tell me, who are you? Are you some Gandharva or a Yaksha or a demigod who has taken the form of a monkey and is lying here to give some benediction to me?" At that time the monkey replied, "Whatever it may be, O valiant warrior, please return from where you have come. Otherwise you will meet with destruction." Bhima felt his anger rising. Nobody speaks to Bhima like that, you see, and gets away with it. So Bhima said, "My dear monkey, I did not ask you for permission to go. I don't need it. And neither am I concerned with what thoughts you have about my destruction. So please move out of the way immediately." So Hanuman, I gave up the suspense, sorry. So the monkey said, it happens by mistake. Anyway, now you know, the suspense is broken. So the monkey said, "Well, it is so simple. You can just step over me and go." So Bhima replied, "Well, how can I step over you? I can never do that. Because I know that the Super Soul, the Supreme Lord, is living in your body, in your heart. And stepping over your body means to offer disrespect to the Super Soul. This is an important part of etiquette. Especially in our temple when we are offering obeisances, sometimes it may happen that we step over the body of somebody. That is considered an offense. We should not step over anybody's body. So even Bhima, as a very cultured Aryan, was very aware of this. And then he thought to himself that this monkey reminds me somehow of Hanuman, that great son of the wind god Vayu. But then of course this cannot be Hanuman, because Hanuman lived so many millions of years ago. And I don't think it is possible that Hanuman will be here. But then he spoke to the monkey and said, even if I were aware, even if I were not aware of the super soul, know for certain that I can jump over, being the son of the wind god, over vast ranges just like my good brother, Hanuman. So then the monkey again looked up. Hanuman? Who is that? Can you tell me something about him? So Bhima replied, yes, I am proud to say that he is my elder half-brother. He is also the son of the wind god as I am. And he destroyed the armies of Ravan. And he was a great servant of the Supreme Lord Sri Ram. So then Hanuman, or rather the monkey, he said, all right, if you want to go, so be it. All you have to do is to just move my tail. Just move it across and go. So Bhima very casually tried to just push the tail aside. But he was not able to move it. Then he clasped the tail with his powerful arm and tried to move it, but it would not budge an inch. Then he held the tail with both his arms and exerted all his power. And he was exerting himself, straining at the face, straining at his muscles. His sweat was breaking out on his brow. And his face was being wrinkled out of exertion. But he could not move that tail even one inch. Finally, he gave up. And he said, now, I realize that you are not an ordinary person. Please tell me who you are. And he offered his obeisances. Then the monkey replied, my dear Bhima, I am none other than that same Hanuman. I am your elder brother. So please know for certain that my blessings will always be with you. And yes, if you want to know the path to get the Saugandhika flowers, you go in that direction. But remember, do not cause any violence to the different living entities here. And when you go to the realm of the Siddhas, higher up in the higher regions of these mountains, please do not forcefully try to get the flowers from them. You must learn to control your passions, and you must learn to control your violent temper. At that time, Bhima, he begged of Hanuman, please show me that form which you exhibited when you jumped over the sea to reach Lanka. I am very, very eager to see that form. So Hanuman replied, my dear Bhima, it is not possible for me to show you this form, because when I jumped over the sea to Lanka, that was in Treta Yuga, long, long ago, when things were far different from what they are now. Of course, we must remember that this conversation was taking place somewhat towards the end of Dwapar Yuga. Compared to Kali Yuga, people in Dwapar Yuga were giants. They were really giants. And in Treta Yuga, the average person was a giant compared to the average person of Dwapar Yuga. So, Hanuman said, the form that I assumed at that stage was so awesome, was so big, that it is not possible for me to show that form now. One must respect the laws of nature. One must respect the arrangements that are made by providence and time. I cannot show before you what I showed in an earlier age. And then Bhima asked Hanuman to narrate the characteristics of the different yugas. He said, you have practically been here since the first age. So I am eager to hear from you of the qualities of these four ages. And then Hanuman went on to describe the four qualities of Satya, Treta, Dwapar and Kali, and reinforced his earlier statement that he could not at this time show the form of his that jumped over to Lanka. But Bhima was insistent. He begged and begged that somehow or other I want to see that form. So then Hanuman said, all right, stand back. So Bhima went back. And then Hanuman suddenly expanded. And he grew higher and higher and higher, and he became as tall as a mountain. Bhima's hair stood on end as he watched with awe as Hanuman was growing and growing and bigger and bigger and stronger. And then with a mighty roar-like sound from high up, Hanuman said, so now, are you satisfied, Bhima? I can go no higher than this for your sake. Remember that I have the power to expand unlimitedly. But considering the age that we are in right now, this is the limit to which I will expand myself now. Then again he resumed his normal size and said, my dear Bhima, I want to bless you and give you a benediction. Tell me what you want. If you wish, I can go to the kingdom of Duryodhan and Dhritarashtra and raise the whole capital city to ashes. I can destroy those evil sons of Dhritarashtra in a moment. What do you want? Please tell me. So Bhima replied, oh dear Hanumanji, all we want are your blessings and your mercy. We want your support in the war, and if you simply bless us, I am sure that all auspiciousness will come for us. So Hanuman said, so be it. My dear Bhima, I give you the benediction that in the battle, when you will roar in the frenzy of battle, then I will roar along with you. My roar will mix and combine with yours and shatter the hearts of the enemies. And being situated on the flag of Arjuna, I will also roar from there to send panic amongst the enemy soldiers. So go forth now and get the Saugandhika flower for good Draupadi. So taking the blessings of Hanuman, Bhima bowed down and left from that place. So we can see that this is one connection between the Ram Leela and the Krishna Leela. And Hanumanji was there in the Mahabharata, he has appeared in the Bhagavad Gita, and he has come on the flag of Arjun. So Hanumanji, of course, is well known for being the eternal servant of the Lord, the best servant of the Lord. He is in the Dasyaras, the mood of servitude. When Sri Prahlad Maharaj describes in the Srimad Bhagavatam the ninefold processes of devotional service, the Dasyaras is mentioned as one of them. Our Vaishnava Acharyas have indicated that one can select any one of these nine processes of devotional service or a combination of them and attain perfection. And they have given examples of how different great devotees have perfected their life by accepting just one of these principles each. So the example that is given for the Dasir, for this being the servant of the Lord, is Hanuman. The moment you think of servant of God in the Dasiras, immediately we think of Ravan. In the Hayashirsha Pancharatra, which Srila Prabhupada talks about in the Nectar of Devotion, when Lord Narsingadev appeared before Prahlad Maharaj, he asked him for a benediction. And Prahlad Maharaj replied that, "My dear Lord, I do not want anything material from you. I have not come to you seeking some material favor, just like a businessman." And at that time, Prahlad Maharaj remembered and mentioned Hanuman's name. That just as Hanuman always served Lord Ramachandra out of pure love, without even a tinge of any self-interest in that service, similarly, Prahlad, deriving inspiration from the example of Hanuman, also desired to serve the Lord in that spirit of selflessness, of pure devotion. Devotees of the Lord offer obeisances to Hanuman for this purpose. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita also, in one purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes this same verse that Hanuman actually prays to the Supreme Lord Sri Ramachandra. And the verse is, Bhava bandha chidde tasya isprahyami na muktaye bhavan prabhu aham dasa iti yatra vilupyate. Hanuman is praying to Lord Ram saying, "My dear Lord, I do not want to merge into your impersonal effulgence, nor do I want liberation." Bhava bandha chide means to cut asunder the bondage of bhava, of this material existence, or even of merging into the impersonal existence of the Lord. He says, "I do not want these things." Why not? Aham dasa iti yatra vilupyate. Because the mentality or the mood of aham dasa, that I am your servant, will be lost. If I am to merge with your impersonal effulgence, then how will I be able to serve you? In this way, Srila Prabhupada comments that this is the essential difference between the Mayavadis and the devotees. The devotees want to be eternally serving the lotus feet of the Lord. They do not even care for liberation. What to speak of impersonal liberation? They do not even care for the other liberations that are available to the devotees, like living on the same planet as the Lord, Salokya, having the same form as the Lord, Sarupya, having close proximity to the Lord, Samipya, and so on. Or even the same opulence as the Lord, Sarshti. They do not even desire that. They simply want to serve the Lord in any condition that the Lord may desire. And they do not therefore desire freedom from the cycle of birth and death. However, the Lord, being very kind and merciful upon his devotees, very quickly releases the devotees from the sufferings of this world and transports them into the eternal spiritual world to be a part of his associates there in the eternal kingdom. So Hanuman, by his prayers, by his mood, is showing us how a devotee is so glorious that he doesn't want anything else except unconditional service to the Supreme Lord. Hanumanji is fixed in his service to Lord Ram. Srila Prabhupada explains that different devotees in the spiritual world, different perfected devotees, have their own particular moods for serving the Supreme Lord. And they are fixed in that mood. It cannot be changed. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in his essay called Vaishnavism Real and Apparent, mentions that the particular mood of a jiva to serve the Lord in the spiritual world is fixed. The jiva will not like to shift his mood in the spiritual world. Although hypothetically one may say anything is possible in the spiritual world, because it is Chintamani Dham, all desires can be fulfilled. So one may wonder that if somebody is a devotee of, let us say, Narayan, maybe he will go to Goloka Vrindavan and serve Krishna. Maybe a cow may desire to become a gopi. But actually, every jiva is completely satisfied in his or her particular mood and position of service to the Lord in the spiritual world. Because the different rasas on the spiritual platform are based on the foundation of prema, pure love of God, where the different rasas exist. And the characteristic of these rasas is that the devotee experiencing and tasting that rasa finds complete fulfillment and satisfaction. Even if that devotee has an appreciation for a devotee in a higher ras or a different ras being superior, still, although he appreciates and glorifies that devotee, but still he or she wants to remain in that position. Because that is where he or she feels the greatest comfort and ecstasy. That is a constitutional position. So Srila Prabhupada explains that Hanuman is aware of Lord Narayan. He is also aware that Lord Narayan and Lord Ram are non-different. They are the same Supreme Lord. But nevertheless, Hanuman's service is reserved for Lord Ram only. In this connection, there is one story from Gaur Leela, from Chaitanya Leela. Gauranga Mahaprabhu, as we all know, is none other than the Sri Krishna himself. And many, many devotees from not only Krishna Leela, but some even from Ram Leela, advented into the circle of Gauranga Mahaprabhu's associates to participate in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Among them was Murari Gupta. Murari Gupta was also a great devotee of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu. He was a doctor. He was a doctor, correct? Murari Gupta. Actually, he is the one who has noted down in his kadachas or in his notes and diaries many of the childhood pastimes and of Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu as Nimai Pandit. Swarup Damodar Goswami has recorded the later pastimes in his notes. Raghunath Das Goswami heard these descriptions from Swarup Damodar Goswami. When he went to Vrindavan, he would narrate the pastimes of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu as he had heard from Swarup Damodar Goswami. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami eventually compiled the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Murari Gupta's notes are very valuable because they give great information about the earlier pastimes of the Lord. So one time when Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu was glorifying his devotees, Murari Gupta also happened to be present there. And let us see the conversation that ensued of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said at that time. I will read only the translations and not the verses because it will take some time to read all the verses. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then embraced Murari Gupta and began to speak about his firm faith in devotional service. This was heard by all the devotees. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Previously, I induced Murari Gupta again and again to be allured by Lord Krishna. I said to him, 'My dear Gupta, Lord Sri Krishna, Vrajendra Kumar, is the supreme sweetness. Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, the origin of all incarnations and the source of everything. He is pure transcendental love itself, and he is a reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna is a reservoir of all transcendental qualities. He is like a mine of gems. He is expert at everything, very intelligent and sober, and he is a summit of all transcendental humors. his character is very sweet, and his pastimes are melodious. He is expert in intelligence, and thus he enjoys all his pastimes and mellows. I then requested Murari Gupta, worship Krishna and take shelter of him. But for his service, nothing appeals to the mind. In this way he heard from me again and again. By my influence, his mind was a little converted. Murari Gupta then replied, I am your servant and your order carrier. I have no independent existence. After this, Murari Gupta went home and spent the whole night thinking how he would have to give up the association of Raghunath, Lord Ramachandra. Thus, he was overwhelmed. Murari Gupta then began to pray at the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra. He prayed that death would come that night, because it was not possible for him to give up the service of the lotus feet of Raghunath. Thus Murari Gupta cried the entire night. There was no rest for his mind. Therefore he could not sleep, but stayed awake the entire night. In the morning, Murari Gupta came to see me. Catching hold of my feet and crying, he submitted an appeal. Murari Gupta said, I have sold my head unto the lotus feet of Raghunath. I cannot withdraw my head, for that would give me too much pain. It is not possible for me to give up the service of Raghunath's lotus feet. At the same time, if I do not do so, I shall break your order. What can I do? In this way, Murari Gupta appealed to me, saying, You are all merciful, so kindly grant me this mercy. Let me die before you, so that all my doubts will be finished. Hearing this, I became very happy. I then raised Murari Gupta and embraced him. I said to him, All glories to you, Murari Gupta. Your method of worship is very firmly fixed. So much so that even upon my request, your mind did not turn. The servitor must have love and affection for the lotus feet of the Lord exactly like this. Even if the Lord wants separation, a devotee cannot abandon the shelter of his lotus feet. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes from the Antilila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, two more shlokas which are very nice, which are general statements about the relationship between the devotee and the Lord, which I will just briefly read, these two verses.
Shai bhakta dhanya jena chade prabhu charan, shai prabhu dhanya jena chade nija jan.
Shai bhakta dhanya, that devotee is glorious, jena chade prabhu charan, who doesn't leave the lotus feet of the Lord. Shai prabhu dhanya, and that Lord is glorious, who doesn't abandon his own people, nija jana, that means his devotees.
Durdaiva shevak jadi jaya anna sthane, shai thakur dhanya tare chule dhori ane.
However, even though the devotee doesn't leave the Lord, and the Lord doesn't abandon the devotee, if somehow or other, by some misfortune, the devotee leaves the Lord then and goes to another place, then what happens? Shai Thakur Dhanya. That Lord is glorious because he holds his devotee by the hair and pulls him back to his lotus feet. In this way, the mood of Murari Gupta is being glorified by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I will continue quoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu again. Just to test your firm faith in your Lord, I requested you again and again to change your worship from Lord Ramachandra to Krishna. In this way I congratulated Murari Gupta saying, indeed, you are the incarnation of Hanuman. Consequently, you are the eternal servant of Lord Ramachandra. Why should you give up the worship of Lord Ramachandra and his lotus feet? I accept this Murari Gupta as my life and soul. When I hear of his humility, it perturbs my very life. In this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu glorified Murari Gupta, who is none other than Hanuman. And in the process of glorifying Murari Gupta, he was actually glorifying Hanuman for his steady and fixed devotion to the lotus feet of Sri Ramachandra. So Hanuman's glories as a devotee are well known all over the three worlds. From time immemorial, from the time the story of Lord Ram has been current in this world, the glories of Hanuman have also been discussed. He has performed many, many extraordinarily powerful feats, like jumping over the sea, destroying the armies of Ravana, carrying a mountain right to the battlefield, a mountain from the Himalayas, carrying it right there to Lanka, and jumping from there over the sea again with the mountain. He has performed so many such valorous activities. But the devotee of the Lord, like Hanuman, always knows that whatever extraordinary activities he may be able to perform is only due to the mercy of the Supreme Lord alone. It is not because of any qualification that he may have. And in this way, the devotee remains forever dependent upon the mercy of the Lord and always humble. He never becomes proud like the materialistic people do when they are blessed with the Lord, by the Lord for having some particular shakti or some opulence. In spite of Hanuman being so powerful and so qualified, he always felt himself very humble and always at the lotus feet of his Supreme Lord, Sri Ramachandra. It is noteworthy that so indebted was Sri Ramachandra to Hanuman that he made Hanuman do feats that were more extraordinary than the activities that he himself did. This is an important point to note. For example, Lord Ram is credited with building the bridge across the sea. This bridge was not an ordinary bridge, as we all know. It was a bridge made of stones that were made to float on the water. Now this is something very unusual, because stones generally sink. But by the power, the potency of Sri Ramachandra, the stones floated. And a bridge was created by, on which the entire army of Sri Ramachandra crossed the sea to go to Lanka. But if this sounds extraordinary, just think how extraordinary was the action of Hanuman, who jumped over the sea. Lord Ram needed a bridge to cross the sea, but Hanuman didn't even need a bridge. Hanuman simply jumped over. So who is more powerful? If you just look at the activities, that Hanuman, Lord Ram appeared to be dependent on a bridge, and Hanuman wasn't. Hanuman just jumped across, because Lord Ram had empowered Hanuman to be so. Of course, the Lord is omnipotent. Therefore, he can perform any activity he likes easily. But nevertheless, even in relationship to his devotees, he likes to show himself as being less than his devotee. So here is the wonderful, glorious relationship between the Lord and his devotees. How did Hanuman appear in this world? And how did he get the tremendous powers that he possesses? These are wonderful narrations that appear in the Valmiki Ramayana. It is said that one time after Lord Ramachandra had returned to Ayodhya after killing Ravana and he was established as the king, he met Agastya Muni, the great sage, and he asked Agastya one question. Because before that, Agastya had been narrating about the power of Vali and Ravana, how powerful they were. Actually, Vali was even more powerful than Ravana. Vali was the older brother of Sugriva. And Vali had easily defeated and captured Ravana, effortlessly. That is also described in the Ramayana. And when Ram heard all these narrations, he was surprised. But one more thing surprised him even more than that. So he asked this question to Agastya Rishi. He said, "My dear Muni, you have explained about the power of Vali and Ravan, who were certainly very extraordinary. But I can understand from the symptoms of Hanuman's activities that he must have been more powerful than Vali and Ravan. In fact, if Hanuman had wanted to, he could have destroyed the whole of Lanka and killed Ravana." Incidentally, I'll make a break in this story for a moment to go back to the story of Bhima meeting Hanuman in the forest in the Himalayas. This was one question that Bhima had asked Hanuman also, which I omitted to mention there. That, "Oh my dear Hanuman, you are so powerful. Why did you have to give Lord Ram the trouble to cross over to the over the sea and kill Ravan? You could have easily done the job yourself. Why did you have this whole battle take place?" And Hanuman replied, "My dear Bhima, of course I could have killed Ravan. I could have killed all the Rakshasas in Lanka and reduced Lanka to ashes in no time. But if I did that, the glory would come to me. And Lord Ramachandra's glories would be obscured. So therefore, I did not do that. I knew that it was the Lord's desire that he should kill Ravana with his own hands and thus establish his own glory." In this way, we see that Hanuman was acting in deference to the will of the Lord. So then Lord Ram was asking Agastya Muni, and he said, "The kind of activities that Hanuman has performed, like jumping over the sea and setting Lanka on fire and so on, are so extraordinary that I can understand that he could easily have defeated Vali and Ravan both. But he didn't kill Ravan and he didn't also kill Vali." Actually, you know the story also, that when Lord Ramachandra, we'll discuss that a little later, when Lord Ramachandra reached Kishkindha Kshetra in South India, which is in the middle of Karnataka bordering Andhra Pradesh, in the place called Hampi, the beautiful Pampa Sarovar is there. At that time, Sugriva was living in fear, in exile from his own kingdom. He was in fear of his older brother Vali, who had threatened him with death if he ever came near. Somehow or other, that particular portion where Sugriva was taking refuge was protected, was a protected place because a rishi had cursed Vali that should he ever enter that region, he would die. So Sugriva was taking shelter there and Hanuman was living with him. Now Vali was more powerful than Sugriva. And Vali had even abducted Sugriva's wife. And Hanuman at that stage was unable to help Sugriva, which is something astonishing. And it was left to Lord Ram to come to kill Vali. So now reflecting and thinking back, Lord Ramachandra was asking the question that why was it that the all-powerful Hanuman could not help his dear, dear friend Sugriva and kill Vali? Why was it left for me to do this job? At this time, Agastya Muni said, "Oh my dear Ram, let me tell you the story behind this. It is a fascinating story, and if you are interested to hear, I will narrate it." Ram, the Supreme Lord, is definitely eager to hear narrations about the glories of his own devotees. So he came forward eagerly. "Yes, please tell me. What happened? What is the secret behind this?" So Agastya Muni said that there was a curse given to Hanuman by some Brahmanas. And the curse was that he would forget his power and his glories till someone reminded him. Although he was so powerful, but he would not know that he was powerful. And therefore he would not venture to do activities which in his state of forgetfulness he thought he would not do. He could not do. But later on he was reminded, and therefore he could accomplish many, many wonderful feats. But that happened after the incident of your killing Vali. So naturally the question arises, why did the Brahmanas curse Hanuman in this way? And how come this? What were the circumstances that led to this? Then Agastya goes back further to talk about the history of Hanuman's birth. He says, once upon a time, there was a very pious lady who was born in the clan in the species of monkeys. Her name was Anjana. Actually, at another place in the Valmiki Ramayana, it is mentioned that this Anjana Devi was an apsara called Punjaka Sthala in an earlier life. And somehow or other she was cursed by a rishi. And so she was born as the daughter of a monkey chief whose name was Kunjara. And she was named as Anjana. She was endowed with all auspicious and good qualities and also was very beautiful. And in course of time she later happened to be married to Keshari. Actually, Keshari, although married to Anjana, was not the real father of Hanuman. The real father of Hanuman was Vayu, the wind god. The wind god, being attracted by the beautiful features of Anjana, he produced this most beautiful and powerful son through her, and kept her maidenhood intact by his blessings. Just as we see in the case of Kunti with the demigods who approached her. And he gave this boy all kinds of benedictions and blessings that he would become very powerful and very, very qualified. So this boy, he was extremely powerful being the son of the wind god. He had the power also to move in the universe like the wind and move as fast as the wind. So one time his mother Anjana was preparing to feed him. Now this place is still existing in near Hampi. Any devotees have been to Hampi here? Many have gone. Have you climbed up the hill? It is called Anjana Parvat, where Hanuman was born, that place. Anjana Devi lived there on top of that mountain. You have to climb up many, many stairs. By the time you walk up, you have a foot, your legs start aching. It is, you have to climb and climb and climb. Somehow you reach. And just a couple of sadhus are living there. Just two or three sadhus live there, high up on that mountain. And the peculiarity of this place is that this place is very barren, just rocks and only rocks. You will find all around. But in this barrenness is a wonderful beauty. And the extraordinary thing any traveler notices at this place is the way the stones that are the rocks all over that are strewn arbitrarily, randomly, how they are balanced on top of each other. And there are some arrangements of rocks which will take our breath away. There are some rocks which has just the pointed tip of it is just hanging on, is placed on another rock. And there are hundreds of such arrangements you can see there. And you are left wondering, how is this rock there? How was it placed in the first place? Who could have carried such a huge rock to the top of that place to keep it there? The scientists, of course, have no answer. If they say it, the stones were just worn away with rain and wind and so on, with the natural elements, it cannot explain how it was so finely and properly eroded. So you can see these stones are just placed like this all over that entire region. That whole region is called Kishkindha in the olden days. And that section of the Ramayana that describes Lord Ramachandra's travels in that region and his residence there is called the Kishkindha Kanda, as I mentioned yesterday briefly. So then, when Anjana Devi went out to look for some fruits for him, for her child, then Hanuman became hungry. Of course, he was not named Hanuman as yet. The child became hungry and impatient because his mother had not returned. Just at that time, he noticed the sun in the sky. And in his childish innocence, he thought that the sun was a fruit. And he wanted to eat that fruit, being hungry. Now, many children, ordinary children, also desire such impossible things. They may ask for the moon, ask for the stars, and all the parents can do is to say, yes, yes, I will give you tomorrow. But Hanuman, he wanted the sun and he made his efforts to get the sun. He simply leaped into the sky. And as he leaped, he was moving so fast. It was hundreds of yojanas. One yojana is 8 miles. Hundreds and hundreds of yojanas he was zipping through the sky. And as he moved at that speed, the residents of the higher planets, Bhuvar Loka and the Yakshas and the Siddhas and Gandharvas and all these other heavenly beings, they were especially astonished. Who is this little child who is flying through the sky at such a high speed? He seems to be moving faster than even the mind, the speed of the mind. Generally, the mind is considered to be the fastest because you can go from here to any place in the universe in 1 second. So this child, this entity is moving so fast in the sky. Who is this? Everyone began to get a little curious and a little perturbed, concerned. And he's going right towards the sun. And as he was moving, then Vayu noticed that his son was moving towards the sun. S-O-N was moving towards S-U-N. So Vayu came over the child and covered him. So to Hanuman, it felt ice cool. The heat of the sun didn't bother him at all. And he continued his flight onwards and was approaching the sun. And everyone was getting very, very afraid. What is happening? Nobody has approached the sun in this way. And he actually went and touched, approached the chariot of the sun god. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 5th canto, there is a description of how the sun god moves on his chariot. Do you know the name of his charioteer? Arun, Aruna. Arunodaya, we use the word Arunodaya. Aruna Udaya, when the charioteer of the sun rises. He has many horses, etc. So for further description, you may read the 5th canto. So Hanuman nicely went and placed himself on the chariot of the sun god, right in the sun, globe of the sun. And the sun god also refrained from burning the child, understanding him to be just a child who was innocent, who didn't understand, and who was also the son of Vayu. Now it happened that by the will of providence, Rahu was approaching the sun just at that time. Now, as you know, An eclipse is understood from our shastras is when Rahu approaches the sun and the moon and covers them up and swallows them for a while. And when Rahu came there, because that was the time it was supposed to happen, and he suddenly saw that somebody else is there who appears to be going to devour the sun. So he was very shocked. I have competition. Who is that? And then as he approached the chariot, he was shooed away by the child Hanuman. And Hanuman thought that here is another fruit that is coming. Because Rahu was only in the form of a head. Again, you remember from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of the distribution of nectar by the churning of the ocean. That was done by Mohini Murti, the incarnation of the Lord, in the form of a lady. She was so beautiful, she bewildered and captivated the minds of the demigods and the asuras alike. And she had everyone eating out of her hands, literally, out of her palms. She made the demigods and the asuras sit in separate lines. Somehow or other, this Rahu, who was an asura, he slipped in between the sun god and the moon god, and sat in between them in their line. And when Mohini Murti was coming and giving out the nectar from her pitcher that she had, then Rahu also got a bit of that, and he quaffed it immediately. Immediately the sun and moon god said, no, he's not one of us, he's not one of us. And the Lord chopped off his head. But the nectar had already gone into the throat. It didn't go down, so the bottom part of the body, the torso, died. But the neck and the head remained alive because the nectar was there. So Rahu remains only with his head and neck. So when this head and neck was approaching the sun, then baby Hanuman thought this was another fruit. So he left the sun fruit and he jumped towards this one. And poor Rahu fled for his life. And he ran, he flew through the skies to go back to Indra. And he came panting and puffing, Indra, Indra, what is going on in your reign? I thought that you, as the king of the devas, had allotted to me my food, that occasionally on certain times I can go and devour the sun and the moon. But now, I see that there is some other Rahu over there. Who is the second Rahu who has suddenly come from nowhere? Indra was shocked. Second Rahu, who is this? And he got up suddenly, caught his vajra, told Airavata, come here. And Airavata was ready in his service, and Indra rushed on the back of Airavata, who was extremely powerful. And he also sped towards the sun globe. Then Hanuman spotted Indra coming on Airavata. And he thought, oh, here is another very wonderful fruit. So he jumped towards Indra now. And Indra was thinking, my God, this child is now coming towards me. And then he said, there is only one way now. So he let loose his vajra. Because Indra's powerful weapon is the vajra, the thunderbolt. And he let loose the vajra. And it struck the child as he was flying through the space. And that knocked him unconscious. And in the course of his mid-flight, that he fell down, all the way down to the earth planet. And he fell onto a mountain. And because of that fall, he hurt his chin. And he was lying there, deeply hurt and unconscious. At that time, Vayu, the father of Hanuman, became outraged. He was very, very angry. Now, Vayu, as you know, is circulating everywhere in the universe. Vayu circulates within our bodies. And because Vayu as prana is moving within us, we are able to perform our bodily functions. If Vayu were not there, we would be like a block of wood. All the joints would become stiff. And none of the activities within the body, whether of respiration, evacuation, digestion, etc., could take place. So Vayu withdrew himself because he was really upset and he was sulking along with his child deep in a cave. And all the living beings, especially the higher planets, were unable to evacuate. And their stomachs were getting bloated. So they were becoming extremely anxious. What to do now? We are hardly able to breathe, we are not able to do any bodily function. So they all got together and exchanged their thoughts about their respective conditions. And then they decided that it was time to go to Brahma, because it was a dangerous situation. All the living beings were running helter-skelter for some kind of refuge, for some solution to this problem. So when they went to Brahma, the Brahma said, this is the reason, I think. Because the wind god Vayu has been offended, because you have hurt his child, who has fallen now and is seriously injured. And as you know, without Vayu circulating, without the air in the universe, nothing can take place. Air is life. Air is vitality. Air is happiness. So therefore, let us now go, my dear demigods, and pacify the wind god. And so all the demigods followed Brahma as they journeyed down to the earth planet. And Brahma, being all-knowing, knew where the wind god was. So they went to that particular cave. And there they saw Vayu sitting with his child on his lap. The child was unconscious. And Vayu was extremely morose. And he was sitting there in a very depressed mood, sitting with his child like that. And as soon as Vayu saw Brahma personally coming there, and the demigods also had come there, he became very enlivened. Brahma spoke a few sweet words to him, and Vayu was pacified. He immediately started flowing in everybody's bodies again. And everybody suddenly felt very nice again, and they were comfortable. At that time, Brahmaji mentioned to the demigods that, oh dear demigods, let us now, for the pleasure of our dear Vayu, offer all kinds of benedictions to this child who is here. So then the different demigods one by one came forward and started offering this little child some benedictions. Indra came forward, and he offered his own garland that was made out of beautiful lotuses that never fade. He garlanded this child. And he offered him the benediction that henceforth you will become immune to the vajra. And also he gave him another benediction or a name of Hanuman. How does the name Hanuman come? Does anybody know? What is the etymology of this, or the origin of this word, Hanuman? Hanu, the word Hanur, Hanuhu means the chin. So you see, when the child had fallen down after being hit by the Vajra weapon, he had hurt and cracked his chin. So the one with the cracked chin, so then Indra said, henceforth, because of that, you will be known as Hanuman. So that is how the child's name became Hanuman. So it was Indra who gave that name to him. And then Surya came forward and he said, I benedict this child that he will get 100th of my brilliance. And also, he will have full knowledge of the scriptures. And I will personally teach him all the Vedas. As you know, the sun god is very learned. What is the proof for that? What is the proof that the sun god is very learned? Because Krishna has personally instructed him. In the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we hear, Imam Vivasvate Yogam Proktavan Aham Avyayam. Krishna says to Arjuna that many, many years ago, I personally instructed this message of the Vedas, of the Bhagavad Gita, to the sun god, Vivaswan. So Vivaswan is a very, very learned personality. So he said that I will impart personally all the knowledge of the Vedas and grammar and everything else to this child. And I also bless him that he will become a very, very eloquent speaker. It's called Vakpatu. Vakpatu, Vak means speech, Patu means expert. So one who is very expert in speaking. So Hanuman was blessed that not only would he be a very gifted speaker, but his speech would be very sweet, and he would be able to convince anyone of anything. And then Varuna came forward and he said, I bless this child that he will live for millions of years and he will not meet death at the hands of my noose or in the water. Yamaraj came forward and said that he is immune to my death rod, and also I bless him that he will never fall sick. He will never have any illness. Then Kuber came forward. He said he will never be subject to my mace. And I also bless him that he will never be tired in battle. Then Lord Shiva came forward. I bless this child, Hanuman, that he will never be harmed or defeated either by my hands or by my weapons. Because you see, many of the Asuras and Rakshasas are worshippers of Lord Shiva. And Shiva, being Ashutosh, is very easily pleased by their worship, and many times indiscriminately he gives them all kinds of benedictions and weapons. So Lord Shiva's weapons are often in the hands of those unscrupulous Asuras, which may be misused now. So Shiva said that even if there is some weapon which I have given to anybody, it cannot be used against this child anymore. And then Vishwakarma said also that I have fashioned most of the high-tech weapons now that are used by the demigods. And I bless this child that he will never be subject to the effect of these weapons. Then Brahmaji came forward and he began to bless the child. He said, this child Hanuman will have a very, very long life. He will be a great soul, a Mahatma. And he will be free from curses of Brahmanas, that he will die. He will be immune from death curses. Many times we see that when Brahmanas get angry with someone, they may curse them to die. Just like a 12-year-old boy, Sringi, the son of Shamik Rishi, cursed Maharaj Parikshit to die. And Maharaj Parikshit accepted that curse. It took place. It had effect. So Brahmaji blessed him that he could not anymore be cursed to die by anybody. And then he turned to Vayu and he said, my dear Vayu, this son of yours will be a terror to his foes in battle. And as far as his friends are concerned, he will never be a source of fear to them. Rather, he will always be a source of great strength for them. I bless him that he will be able to change his form at will. He can assume any form he likes. I also bless him that he can travel at any speed he likes. I also bless him that he can move around this universe unrestrictedly. Wherever he wants, he can go. And also I give the ultimate blessing that he will be the one who will assist the Supreme Lord to uproot that evil tree in the form of Ravan. And in this way, everyone who was there present in that assembly was overjoyed. And Hanuman had now been equipped with all these extraordinary benedictions. So Vayu happily took him back to Kishkindha Kshetra. He handed him over to Anjana Devi and left from that place. With his newfound strength and vigor, already he was very strong, being the son of the wind god, and now he had all these benedictions. he began his mischief as a small baby monkey. We have a lot of experience of that here in Vrindavan. But we must realize that there is a whole world of a difference between the monkeys we see here and the monkeys there in Kishkindha. These were powerful, huge monkeys. Extraordinary power. So as a child, Hanuman would revel in harassing the rishis who were performing the yajnas. He would go and break the ladle. He would jump over the fire. He would spoil all the sacrificial ingredients. And in this way, he was causing so much trouble there, the rishis and sages were extremely disturbed. And they often admonished him that stop doing this mischief. They complained to the mother and the father, Anjana and Keshari. But the mother and father tried their best to counsel the child, to scold him, but of no avail. Even Vayudev personally came down. And he also counseled his son that please behave yourself. It is not proper for you to disturb all the rishis and munis in this way. But young Hanuman did not listen to anyone. He continued with his mischief unabated. Then finally the rishi said, I think the only way to stop this boy is if we curse him that he will forget his strength. Of course, Valmiki Muni mentions that the rishis did not utter this curse out of anger, because actually they loved this child. But nevertheless, because he was causing so much disturbance and they were not able to perform their prescribed duties as brahmanas, performing sacrifices and doing their puja and so on, so they were forced to utter this curse, that henceforth we curse you, O you dear monkey child, that you will forget your own power and your glories. And you will realize it only when you have been reminded of it. Until somebody points out to you your extraordinary power, you will not even know that you have this extraordinary strength. And immediately after that, the curse took effect, and Hanuman became as well behaved a child as anywhere in the world. In the whole three worlds, you wouldn't find a better behaved child than Hanuman. And time went on. He developed a great friendship with Sugriva. In this way, Agastya Muni described to Lord Ramachandra how it was that Hanuman was cursed in this way to forget his power. And he said then that while he was living with Sugriva, he did not know about his extraordinary power. So he felt himself helpless to help Sugriva in his day of exile. Actually, Sugriva and Vali, they were two brothers. And their father's name was Rikshraj. He was a very powerful monkey warrior, king. Vali was the elder one and Sugriva was the younger one. Vali was the king of Kishkindha Kshetra, and Vali and Sugriva was the crown prince. One day what happened was that a demon called Mayavi came there to the kingdom of Kishkindha, and he challenged Vali to combat. So Vali, being the proper Kshatriya, he accepted this challenge and he went out with Mayavi to fight. And when fighting, they went into a cave. And the fighting was going on and on inside the cave for a long time. Sugriva was waiting outside the cave, at the mouth of the cave. A full 1 year elapsed. There was no sign of Vali coming out. In fact, he could hear so many pitiable sounds coming from inside. And he also saw a lot of blood flowing out of the cave. So Sugriva thought that his brother Vali had been killed by the demon Mayavi. So he left from there, thinking that his brother had died. But before he left, he put a huge rock on the face of the cave to block the cave. And he returned. And he narrated the story of what happened. The ministers of Vali, they then placed Sugriva on the throne of Kishkindha. They anointed him as the king. And Angad, who was the son of Vali, was appointed as the crown prince, the same post that Sugriva had held before. And in this way, Sugriva began ruling Kishkindha. However, Vali had not been killed. Vali was still very much alive. He killed the demon Mayavi, and when he came to the face of the cave, he saw a big, huge rock there. So he somehow, with his great power, pushed out the rock and returned to his kingdom, to the palace. And he learned of what had happened. So when all the residents of Kishkindha saw Vali coming back, and especially when Sugriva saw him, they were all astonished. Vali was angry like anything, especially at Sugriva, because he thought that Sugriva had deliberately done that just to become the king of Kishkindha. Sugriva fell at his feet and tried to pacify him and explain to him that he had not done this with any evil intention, but he had genuinely thought that Vali had died. But Vali was not in the mood to forgive. So he said, because you are my brother, I will spare your life. But I banish you from this kingdom. I do not want you to be here. So Sugriva fled. In the meanwhile, Vali also abducted the wife of Sugriva, whose name was Tara. So Sugriva, he left and started roaming here and there. He knew that there was one place called the Rishyamukha mountain, which would be safe from Vali. And there was a history behind this, that nearby, near the Pampa Sarovar, very beautiful lake, it is still there today for those who visit Hampi. Hampi, incidentally, is one of those heritage sites that is nominated by UNESCO, United Nations Education, Cultural and something. For heritage sites, is one of the few sites all over the world that the United Nations has said should be preserved. So, this Vali, he had one time offended a Rishi called Rishi Matanga, who lived near this Pampa Sarovar. And that forest came to be known as Matanga Van. Van means forest. He offended Matanga, and Matanga was so angry with him that he cursed him, that if you ever die, if you ever enter into the area of this mountain, then you will die. What had happened was that there was a brother of this Mayavi Rakshasa. His name was Dundubhi. And Vali had killed Dundubhi and thrown him a long distance. And the carcass of the dead body of this Dundubhi Asura landed right in the ashram of Matanga Muni as he was sitting in meditation. So Matanga Muni was furious, and he uttered the curse that whoever has done this, I curse him that he will die if he comes within the boundaries of this mountain, Rishyamukha mountain. So Sugriva and Vali both knew about this curse. It was a well-known fact. So Vali kept away, and Sugriva stayed there only because that was a safe place for him. Vali was much more powerful than Sugriva. So Sugriva did not have the courage to come and challenge Vali into combat once again. He was always living in fear, and Hanuman was living with him. And this was before both of them met Ram and Lakshman as they were coming down from the Dandakaranya forest, which is present day Nasik area, Panchavati and so on. And they were coming down south into Kishkindha Kshetra. That is when Ram and Lakshman first met Hanuman and Sugriva. As I mentioned yesterday, Hanuman, of course, is the eternal associate of the Lord. And therefore, he is always with Sri Ramachandra. But in this earthly pastime, in this earthly descent of Lord Ram onto the earth planet, for all external purposes, this was the first time that Hanuman saw Ram and Lakshman. And then the fascinating story of the Ramayana goes on, and we all know the story of how they forged a friendship and eventually achieved both their respective purposes. So in this way, Hanuman at that point in time could not help Sugriva because he did not know his power. It was only much later, when the time came to jump over the sea to look for Sita in Lanka, and all the other animals, the monkeys and the bears, were estimating how much they could jump. Each was saying, I can do this, I can do this. And Hanuman alone was keeping quiet. And it was Jambavan who at that time reminded Hanuman that, my dear Hanuman, don't you remember, you are extraordinarily powerful. He narrated the whole history of Hanuman to Hanuman. His birth and the way he was cursed, his run jumping to the sun to eat it thinking it was a fruit, and everything, all the benedictions of the demigods, the curse of the sages. And he said, now you know how powerful you are. And then Hanuman said, yes, now I have realized how powerful I am. And then he grew to a gigantic size, and then he jumped over the sea to go to Lanka. That's of course a different story. If time permits another day, we will try to narrate that particular pastime a little more in detail. Of course, there is much more to hear and chant about Sri Hanumanji. And Valmiki Ramayana is also has many, many more things and many nice pastimes involving Hanuman. Tomorrow is the 5th, so there will be, we will have our katha tomorrow also. So would you like to hear about Hanuman tomorrow, or would you like to hear about other pastimes of Lord Ramachandra? How many would like the Hanuman katha to continue? Please raise your hand. And or as opposed to the other pastimes of Lord Ramachandra.
Do you want both?
Both, okay. Okay, let us see how time permits. So thank you very much. We will stop here for the day. If there are any questions or comments, then... Yes, Dadu is saying that Vali was a son of Indra and Sugriva was a son of Surya. Yes, it is true. Perhaps we can discuss that a little bit tomorrow, that all these vanaras, the monkeys and the bears, are all sons of the demigods. They are not ordinary monkeys and bears.
They came to help Ram.
Yes. Yes. The question is that when did Hanuman first become a devotee of Lord Ram? In South India, the version of the Shiv Puran is that Shiva gave the Ram mantra to Hanuman. Actually, here is an interesting fact. Even the wind god is not directly the father of Hanuman. This fact is mentioned in other Puranas. That actually it is Lord Shiva's vital energy that was carried by the wind god. So the wind god was actually a vehicle. So in one sense you could say that Hanuman is a son of Shiva also. He is an expansion of Lord Shiva. So there is an intimate connection there. To answer the question of when Hanuman became a devotee of Lord Ram, as I mentioned, The Lord and His devotees are eternally associated with each other. So Hanuman is living in Ayodhya in the spiritual world along with Lord Ram and serving Him eternally. When the Lord descends into this material world, His pure devotees, His eternal associates also descend with Him to participate in His pastimes here. So also Hanuman has descended along with Lord Ram. Yes, as far as the Srimad Bhagavatam is concerned, in the fifth canto we do hear descriptions that Hanuman is still staying, residing in Kim Purusha Varsha in Jambudvip. And he is reciting many, many wonderful prayers in glorification of Lord Ramachandra. Well, Vayu, they say, there are different accounts of that. We will, different Puranas and different Sampradayas say different things about that. Is there any other question? Yes. What is that? What is the Vedic explanation of that stone? Of the stones? I don't know if there is any Vedic explanation. All we can surmise is that, at least personally to my little intelligence, all I could consider is that there is no, somebody has kept these rocks there. And all I can think is that the Vanaras were playing with these rocks like they were playthings. If you go there, you will actually see it appears these have been delicately placed and balanced like that. So the Shastras don't say anything, but it is our speculation that we can't see any so-called scientific answer for this. Is there any other question or comment? Okay, so thank you very much. We will meet again tomorrow at 5 o'clock. Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Shyam Sundar Ki Jai. Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande.